Hey friends, welcome to the Next Step Leadership Podcast, a conversation dedicated to helping you make your next step your best step. I'm Tracy Reynolds, and my partner for the Next Step journey is Chris Maxwell. Together we hope to inspire, assist, and create the confidence you need to take your next step in your personal growth, spiritual growth, vocation, or even your calling. Thanks for joining us. Well, come on, let's dive into this week's episode of Next Step Leadership.
Welcome again to Next Step Leadership Podcast. I'm Chris Maxwell, and first I just want to thank each of you who are listening in and passing the word around about the conversations that Tracy Reynolds and I have with ourselves and with many other people. So just thank you for participating and telling others about Next Step Leadership Podcast. Tracy, thanks again for this opportunity.
Well, I'm grateful as well, Chris. And today we're blessed to have Eric Goss, who is the CEO and founder, co-founder of Minno, and that's M-I-N-N-O. I would probably want to attach a W, but it's not about fish. It's actually a kids' media and tech company that's committed to helping families experience Jesus every day on and off the screen. And I think he makes a compelling argument for why kids should actually, in some ways, have more screen time, but probably more focused screen time, some intentional screen time. So we look forward to learning more about Eric and how we got to meet, as well as what he's doing now and what he's seeing for the future. So welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today. It's great to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you, and so let's just kind of dive in. Tracy gave a brief part of your bio, but tell us more about who you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, so a little about Minno. So Minno's a children's media and technology company, and most people primarily know us through Minno Kids, which is our streaming app. It's sort of like Disney Plus, but for Christian families. The name Minno is actually based on the Greek word for abide, Mino, and that was through a really significant transformational point in my walk with the Lord, where I just felt like Jesus was asking me to abide with him every day. And it was really transformational for me, because I think so much of my Christian life I'd done kind of in my own strength. And granted, I know the Spirit was involved in that, but there was not a focus, I think, for me of living in the Spirit and abiding with Jesus every day. And so when I thought about Minno, really the idea is, what could we do to create a media and technology company to help families experience Jesus every day? And so I've got a varied background. I'm a veteran. I was in the Navy. Probably most significant in my background, I spent 7 years at Amazon. I started working there about 6 months after their IPO. But also was involved in planning a church in Seattle, and all of those experiences really led to today, where my real vision, my real passion is, what can we do to help parents and kids experience Jesus every day? And that's becoming even more significant, I think, because there's really an assault on our kids in regards to a biblical view of life, and in many ways there's an anti-apologetic that exists in children's media today in a way that it's never existed before. And I think we have a tendency to underappreciate the impact of children's media. I've talked to a number of people who are like, oh, that's just kids' cartoons. And what a lot of people don't understand is those kids' cartoons are creating the social narrative, the imagination of what our kids can become or can't become. And my passion is, I really want those kids to know that there's a God who loves them, and there's a God who will be with them each day, guiding them through their lives, who desperately wants to be in relationship and communion with them.
Well, that's powerful. Tell us a bit about how you came to know Christ back. I noticed that you were impacted by the Navigators. You were part of the Naval Academy. Tell us a bit more about you, and then let's dive into what the Lord has placed before you now.
Yeah, so my spiritual biography is, I grew up in a small town, Perryville, Kentucky, right in the middle of Danville. It's actually really close to Asbury. So many folks who are watching what's going on with kind of the revival that's going on there. I grew up kind of right, about a half hour drive from Asbury, And my parents were like, they took me to Sunday school, but they didn't go to church. It was bizarre when I look back on it. And so I walked to Sunday school. My church was a block away, grew up in a Southern Baptist church. And my parents were pretty committed to making sure I went to Sunday school, but they never went to church. And wow. when I was, I had a younger sister who was 5 years younger than me. And as soon as I got to drive, I felt a sort of a sense of guilt over the fact that we weren't going to church. And even before that, I remember when I turned 12, I was baptized in the Southern Baptist Church. I just remember I was a really gifted student, and I was looking at the other kids around me who were getting baptized, and I'm like, I know more about the Bible than they do, and so I should get baptized too. Yeah. Like, I understand Christianity. And so, I just remember, you know, when I started going to church, the real loss for me was I would watch Star Trek reruns at 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings, and I was going to get my Sunday morning with William Shatner anymore. I was going to have to go to church. And so anyhow, I took my sister to church. And so just started going to church. And the thing that was so strange for me, because my parents weren't really engaged, I was really kind of trying to make sense of all this myself. And I just, every time I read scripture and I heard a sermon, I'm kind of like, man, the Jesus in the Bible seems a little different. And I grabbed a copy of The Way, the NLT translation that was really popular. And I decided just to read it. I was like, I kind of want to understand who Jesus is, because I felt a bit of a fraud going to church and being, you know, committed to church. And so read that, and I was like, man, this Jesus guy is a lot different than I sort of presupposed him to be. But I was, you know, that was kind of where things left off in high school. And you know, I was student government president and the valedictorian. I was very focused. My mom was one of nine kids, grew up in Eastern Kentucky, went to a one-room schoolhouse. My dad never got a college education. And I just knew if I was going to make it in this world, I had to do it probably by getting a scholarship. And so I was just very focused on what could I do to advance myself. And in the process of that, selected the Naval Academy, because I just felt like there was a desire for public service. I was also the Top Gun class. So it was like the year they had the most people wanting to get into the Naval Academy in the history of the school. And got there, started my plebe year. Many people know plebe year at the service academy is really hard. It was hard for me. And talk about fish out of water. I was hanging out with guys who were former enlisted, and I grew up in the Bible Belt. I remember it was a big deal when I had to drive the president of my youth group home because he was drunk at a football game. That was kind of the height of sort of my just kind of craziness. But, you know, I got there and there are guys who are talking about going to strip clubs and drinking and boozing all weekend. And you know, here I am, you know, 17 because I was young. And I was just like, man, I'm in over my head. And finished plebe summer, started my freshman year, and a guy came by and said, hey, we're doing a Bible study. Do you want to go? And I'm kind of like, well, you know, I'm a good Southern Baptist, so I should go. And so did the Bible study and was also sang in the glee club, the chapel choir at the Naval Academy. And that Bible study was the Navigators. And so I got exposed to, you know, Bible study, Bible memory, and, you know, some people look on that as kind of intense, and I do myself. You know, we had to memorize a Bible verse every week. We had to share the gospel with someone every week. We had to do 4 hours of Bible study on top of our regular studies. I actually got kicked out of Bible study because I was not prepared. So there was an intensity to it, but, you know, when we had 3 day weekends, people were going away, you know, to go to the coast or go to the beach. I was going to a retreat center covering the Minor Prophets in a weekend. I really didn't know kind of the benefit of that, but like we had guys coming from Reform Theological Seminary or Westminster actually taking us through, you know, the same courses that they were taking their students through. So got good foundation. I would say that it was a little legalistic, but there was a real transition while I was there and read a book. Our navigator leadership had talked to a lot of navs that had graduated, and one of the feedback was, hey, I don't know how good I am relationally. I don't know how good I am at really understanding what it means to connect with people. And so we read a book by Larry Crabb called Inside Out, which is an oldie but a goodie. Which is really like sin is an internal thing. It's not an external thing. And I read that and was devastated by that book, like almost to the point of I didn't want to get out of bed in the morning because I knew I was going to screw up. And because I just saw so much sin in my life, and it was the first time. I mean, I thought I was. You know, I never looked at myself in regards to like being a sinner to that extent. And I just recognized the, the greed, the desire for prestige, for power. And so, and the Naval Academy was also a great place for me to be because it really, it's a tough place to be successful. Like it broke me. And so as a kid who, was first in his class and did well at sports and all that kind of stuff, I was struggling as a student, my first year at the Naval Academy. And so, all this God really used just to draw me to him. And I just remember going to a retreat that summer and just break down in tears, just recognizing God loves me just as I am. And and it's kind of funny I say that because I sing a number of stanzas of Just As I Am with that one plea growing up. I remember graduating from the Naval Academy thinking this was really, really tough. This was difficult for me emotionally because it was hard with my parents. I recognized there was a lot of stuff going on in my family that wasn't really healthy. And just as I was graduating from the Naval Academy, Chuck Swindoll did his Grace Awakening teaching. And I think I listened to that cassette tape course probably 3 or 4 times. And it was really revolutionary for me. And there was a sense of recognizing, the Lord loves me. He's committed to me, and I can trust in him. And so in many ways, I kind of took all those really good disciplines, spiritual disciplines you learn from the Navigators, and I had a really good group of friends that were very committed to the Lord. And the Lord was very gracious in kind of keeping us together through flight school. A lot of the guys I went to Navy with, I actually went through flight school with. And so was involved in a church and, just continuing to walk with the Lord. And then I think, the next major transition for me was leaving the Navy, making a decision, felt like the Lord calling me out of the Navy. I got medically disqualified and couldn't fly anymore and was a public affairs officer. So I was a Navy spokesperson at the Pentagon, and just recognized, I feel like the Lord's wanted me to step out of the Navy and do something different. And so made a decision to go to business school. Business school was really interesting for me because I just recognized I was at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. If folks aren't familiar, two of the events that I was like, they do this thing in college, the Naked Mile. The undergrads run naked or nearly naked through the course, through the campus. And then the Hash Bash, which is like a celebration of marijuana. As a guy who grew up in the Bible Belt and then went to the Naval Academy, which I say the Naval Academy is sort of like going to Bob Jones University without Jesus. It's like you just don't get exposed to much. And so it was the first time that I was in an environment that was really hostile to Christianity. And I would say that there was a sense of kind of, doing well in school, but, I remember the Christian Business Association I was a part of, the club I was in, the leader of it was basically a philanderer, engaged in having sex with other women at school. And I was kind of like, this is just crazy. And the group itself was almost devastated. And in many ways, I ended up being the president by default, sort of last guy standing. Wow. And just really kind of reimagined that. And granted, that's one of those things where I think God blesses faithfulness because at the time we were very small. But after I graduated, I know the InterVarsity staff that was there just said that what we had put in place led to it being one of the more dynamic business school clubs. And just to see how the Lord blessed that was amazing for me. Awesome. I went out to Seattle, got involved in planting a church in downtown Seattle while I was working at Amazon. Amazon's a very intense place. And that church was I mean, Seattle was godless. And I mean, it was the least church city in America at the time I was there. We planted a church in Capitol Hill, Seattle, which most people who know Seattle know that's the, one of the highest concentrations of LGBTQ couples in the United States. And so, again, there was a sense of all these norms that I kind of grew up with, presuppositions being challenged and shaken kind of to their core, because people don't go to church because it's popular there. They go there because they're doing business with Jesus. And so what you find is people have real serious questions about cultural issues that most people try to avoid, and you're kind of living in it. It's just part of your daily life. And so an Amazon, while it's an amazing company, it's not a friendly place to, for people of faith. And so, as I always say, you know, that was one of the places where I learned when people found out I was an evangelical Christian, my IQ dropped 50 points. and you know, I end up being a cultural translator oftentimes because people, a lot of people think that tech platforms are hostile to Christianity. And I do think that the net result is the sense of hostility. But a lot of it is ignorance. A lot of these guys running tech companies don't even have a friend who's Christian, never been around a reasonable Christian in their life. The only Christian they know is the one that they see, you know, elevated in the media. And so felt like the Lord calling me out of Amazon, ended up taking a job in Nashville, Tennessee, where I am today. Primarily, my mom was widowed. I wanted to be in a better position to support her, and was at that company for 2 years. Part of my professional story, I ended up getting fired, which was the first time that I had not done extraordinarily well at anything in my life professionally, and the CEO just didn't like me. It was a, I was a first-time executive. I didn't recognize one of my job requirements was making sure the CEO liked me, and so so that was a good lesson learned, because I'd come from cultures at the Navy and then also to Amazon that were that had strong dialectics. There was a sense of the best argument wins, and not that I was a difficult guy, but what I recognized is the level of intensity that I had basically accepted as the norm was viewed as hostile in the South. And so, as I say, there's more of a tendency towards passive aggressive behavior, and I've learned sort of direct conflict. And there is a big difference in that. And so that, and that's actually been something I've had to learn just even working within Christian circles, because oftentimes you're rewarded more. It's more important to be nice than it is to be good or to be truthful. And so was at that company, fired, didn't know what I was going to do. Crisis. And my co-founder, Dan Raines, basically asked me if I'd be willing to start a media company in his little management company. And I had gotten married when I was in the Navy. I'd had my first child in Seattle and we were coming out here. And so it was really kind of, what could we do to establish a place for a family? I'm doing a startup in 2008, which is crazy. When I look back on it, it's crazy. But raising money for Christian independent films, again, crazy. But the Lord sustained us during that time. And what was important about that for me was it was the first time I'd been involved in sort of what I call kind of the Christian industrial complex, where, you know, business and Christianity are coming together because you've got to have resources to basically create resources for the church. And just felt like the Lord calling me into that. And you're getting part of my professional bio because the Lord has used work so much as an opportunity to speak and challenge me. But got involved with Phil Vischer, who created VeggieTales, did a series called What's in the Bible, and then started a streaming platform called JellyTelly, which was basically sort of a precursor to Menno. But while What's in the Bible was successful, JellyTelly was successful too, but we just didn't have enough capital. I needed to go raise capital. But what happened was everyone who was involved, the investors and some of the partners, everyone had different incentives and didn't want to go forward. And so I ended up in a situation where I was trying to make the company work. It was kind of up to me to save the day. And the Lord had a number of things happen, basically near bankruptcy, both corporately and personally. And I ended up becoming clinically depressed in the midst of all this. And there was a guy who had reached out to me about 6 months earlier. He had a project he was working on, a film. He was asking me for advice. And the next day he called me And he said, hey, the Lord told me this morning you're in crisis and he wants me to help you. And my first thought is, I'm Presbyterian and it does not work that way. and then my second thought was, this is the strangest appeal for executive coaching I think I've ever experienced. And I was kind of like, well, what's the catch? And I'm like, and he's like, there's no catch. He's like, the Lord wants me to work with you. And I'm like, well, what's that look like? He says, well, I'm going to send you verses and questions, and I just want you to work through them. I want you to spend 20 minutes a day working through them. And then I want you to send your journals to me every week so I can process them with you. And I'm kind of like, there's no way on the face of the planet I'm doing that. Are you kidding me? but at the same time, I'm like, this is so strange because it's almost as if he was reading my mail. Like he didn't know anything about our company and he's talking to me about the situation that I'm in. And so, so I ended up working with him. And then in this 6 month period, it's a crazy story, but I end up laying off probably 12 of 16 employees 1 week before Christmas with no severance. Wow. And in business school, you always read those stories and you assume I'm never going to be that guy. Well, I got to be that guy. And one of the things that people don't tell you is, circumstances often create situations where your intentions are actually applied to you. And so there's sort of a sense of, I was trying to do that. Like certain people thought I was trying to do that. And which was nothing could be further from the truth, but circumstances worked out where that was our only option. Devastating to me. This gentleman, his name's Rich Case, Rich reached out to me. And he said, Eric, he goes, one of the things that I've noticed that you are struggling with is you have two catchphrases that you always bring up is I've got to make this happen and I got to figure it out. And he said, what you need to recognize is it's the Lord who creates outcomes in your life, not you. And you don't figure anything out. The Lord reveals what he wants you to know. I was devastated. I was in tears because I recognize I've been spending my whole life trying to make my Christian life work. He actually asked me this question. He said, Eric, do you experience joy in the Lord? Like, do you experience joy? And do you view God as good? And I said, I know God is good and I know I'm supposed to have joy, but I just don't, if I'm honest. I broke down in tears. And he said, well, we're going to fix that. He said, the Lord can fix it. And I'm like, I'm on the brink of bankruptcy. I'm almost in my 50s. My kids are in high school. My life is devastated. And he took me to Isaiah 51:3-4, where the Lord's basically making a commitment that I'm going to turn your wilderness into a garden and I'll turn your desert into an oasis, and that you'll experience joy and gladness and songs of thanksgiving. And I'm like, okay, Rich, you believe that? I'm going to join you on the trail because I want to believe that too, but I don't. And so it was interesting because there was just a sense of, you know what, so much of what I learned at the Naval Academy and the Navigator is so good in regards to spiritual disciplines, but there's a sense of we have a tendency to think it's my will, like what I'm doing in regards to my accumulation of knowledge and understanding that's enhancing my spirituality. And I think what I've recognized is God cares about what I know, but he wants to be like no higher praise can be given to me than to be a friend of God. And when you see, you know, Abraham was a friend of the Lord, Moses is a friend of the Lord. When you look in sort of catalog of faith, being a friend of God is like the highest honor you can be bestowed on you.
True.
And what I recognize is I was a servant, but I was not a friend.
That's powerful, Eric. Let's stop there. We're just about out of time for this episode, and we want to pick up there for the next one. Just thank you for being honest with us and telling us your story. And there's so many people going through times of uncertainty like that. And so we want to have you back in our next podcast, and we'll just kind of start there and see where God has taken you and some lessons you've learned from this story as we're all trying to find ways to make sure that our next step is our best step.
Thanks for joining us on Next Step Leadership, a weekly conversation dedicated to your personal growth and leadership development. Chris and I are so glad you joined us. You can find us on your favorite podcast providers. Do us a favor and hit subscribe. And if you really want to help us, give us a rating. We so appreciate your support. Check out our show notes for more information regarding guest contact information. Tracy Reynolds' new book, Second Chair Leadership, How to Serve, Thrive, and Lead from Where You Play, is available now at ctracyreynolds.com or Amazon. Chris Maxwell's 11th book, Equilibrium, 31 Ways to Stay Balanced on Life's Uneven Surfaces, is available now at chrismaxwell.me or Amazon, where you can find all of Chris's previous books as well. Our featured music is by Casual Americans. You can find their musical releases at casualamericans.com or your favorite music supplier. We release Next Step Leadership each Thursday, so join us again next week on the Next Step Journey, a conversation dedicated to helping you make your next step your best step. Things fill my head.
What?